I'm going to be doing an interview hopefully very soon here with Kristen S. of Palestine News Network. They've just actually got a license from the Palestine Authority. They've been doing the last 4 years, PNN, PNN.PS. That's www.PNN.PS. And we're going to be hearing, hopefully, if everything goes right, from Kristen S. of the Palestine News Network. Stay tuned, Freak Radio Santa Cruz.
I can't help it. I don't care how far you think the analogy extends itself. When I see you making that bus driver climb up and down, on and off the roof of his bus for your amusement for hours in the hot sun, I think of how we once had to dance and sing for them while they shot our parents. When I see you keep that woman and her husband at the checkpoint while she's in labor and you stand there, listening to her scream, watching as she gives birth on the backseat of a taxi, I think of the walls around our own ghetto and how we had to crawl through the sewers looking for rats to eat while we could hear their children playing on the other side. When I see you crush that house and kill that woman and her baby with your armored bulldozer because they didn't have a permit, I think of the way we were once forced to leave our homes at the point of a gun. And when I hear your general say that in order to deal with the Intifada, you must learn from the tactics of another general, one Mr. Stroop in Warsaw, I think of how they bombed our buildings, shot us as we fell from the roofs. And I remember how we wished we could kill their babies too. And I feel sick, sick of your displaced anger, sick of your self-deception, sick of your attempts to deceive the rest of the world, sick of your accusations of anti-Semitism, sick of your occupation, sick of your apartheid state, sick of Zionism. Because standing here in Auschwitz, Birkenau, and Warsaw, I see Jenine, Yaffa, and Rafah. And I think of our ancestors, the Jewish Palestinians, who spoke so eloquently in their Arabic language. But the dead cannot speak. And now I find myself again behind the wall of a ghetto, standing with millions of other Palestinians. And I find myself shouting, Thawra, Thawra, Hatta al-Nasr, tomorrow in Jerusalem, al-Auda, return. You ask me how it is that I dare to take a side. You say I loathe myself, pointing out you have lied. You say it's tribal warfare, but I disagree, for the dynamics of the situation are not difficult to see. On the one side is the fighter jet, on the other is the stone. On the one side is the slave, on the other is the throne. For the many there are checkpoints, while foreign soldiers rule the streets. For the one side there is victory, but the people don't accept defeat. The word you need to know is occupation, the very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the tanks return to Tel Aviv. On the one side there is hunger and bulldozed olive trees. On the other is the army, ruling by decrees. Caterpillars maul the streets, destroy whole city blocks, while children swallow shrapnel for the crime of throwing rocks. Fences are erected around the towns they flatten, and Herzl's own fanatics sleep on sheets of satin. And they water their plantations, drilling ever deeper wells, while the displaced children of the hopeless are filled with bullet shells. The word you need to know is occupation, the very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the settlers return to Tel Aviv.
And of course, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org. On the phone with me, I have Kristen S. Are you there, Kristen?
I'm here. I can hear you.
You can hear me all right?
Yes, hello.
And Kristen S. is the editor, one of the editors for the Palestine News Network, which is at www.pnn.ps. PNN is the first operational independent Palestine news agency, received their first official license in the West Bank, the Palestine Authority Ministry, this week, or last week, I believe it was. And I believe after 4 years, PNN has published in Arabic, English, Hebrew, French, with Spanish and German soon to come, order to ensure that international community receives unbiased, accurate, and up-to-the-minute news from the ground. PNN reporters includes 11 Palestinians from throughout the West Bank and Gaza Strip, 4 multilingual reporters and editors, and a professional tech team. 10 radio stations broadcast our Arabic news, or their Arabic news. 12 television stations run PNN news ticker, but English radio and the English radio program This Week in Review daily news bulletins also run throughout the stations in the U.S., which is hosted by Kristen. And they are an independent licensed news agency now. PNN is dedicated to bringing the news from Palestine to the world in order to encourage understanding of the situation, to bring accuracy to reporting about the Middle East, to provide professional work experience and protection for Palestinian journalists who risk their lives daily in order to report the news. Kristen S., how are you doing today?
I'm fine, thanks.
So what's your reaction to the whole license? You guys have been doing this for 4 years now, right?
We have been doing it for 4 years, and we're really happy to have received this license. It's quite an accomplishment for my colleague who started the Palestine News Network, Fedi Abu Sada. He started the network in his home and ran it without any funding and without any help, save for the network of reporters that he began to gather. And luckily, after a year, we were able to include English, and we started to work together on that. And now we have all these other languages coming in, as you mentioned. And one of the things that we strive to do the most is do radio work. And so inside Palestine, we have a lot of stations that are running the news bulletins, and, of course, the news ticker on the television stations, as you mentioned. And one of the things that's really important about this project, about the Palestine News Network, and the fact that it has its license, is that it now lends a little bit more legitimacy to the idea that Palestinians can report for themselves. There are a lot of people that have the attitude that the only people who will be listened to or taken seriously are foreigners who come from the outside, hopefully ones that are sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, but that somehow their voices are the only ones that are legitimate enough to be heard. Somehow by getting this license, it gives more credence to the idea and the fact that obviously Palestinian journalists are professional, good at what they do, and highly skilled, and that this gives them a lot more of an opportunity to work in a field where they're often not taken seriously by the international community. Since we received this license, I've gotten scores of emails from people in the United Nations and in the consulates that operate here, and throughout the world, saying that they're now using PNN as their exclusive news source for Palestine. So this is really an important step for the journalists that work in the network, so that they have the chance to get their voices heard, get the stories out, and so that people, as I mentioned, can have more understanding of the fact that our reporters from here are professional and great and deserve to have working careers that are successful, and people don't have to rely on foreign voices, and they don't have to rely on places like CNN, who host their reporters inside 48 Lines, who most of them live in Tel Aviv or in the western part of Jerusalem that is being entirely annexed by the Israelis. And so this is a way for real news to come from the ground of the situation here. One of the obstacles that we have, of course, is that the situation being as hideous as it is, people often think that it's biased reporting if we tell the truth about what's happening. But hopefully, the more people hear it and the more they take it seriously, which they seem to be doing because of this license, because we are somehow viewed as being more legitimate now, that hopefully people will understand that the news that's coming from the ground out of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip is the news that's accurate, and it's not accurately telling the story of the situation when the news is coming out of Tel Aviv or the Israeli-controlled West Jerusalem. So this is a really great thing, and there is a licensed news agency that's independent in the Gaza Strip. We were the first ones in the West Bank to receive our license, Since PNN started 4 years ago, with the longest running, and so it's really exciting for the whole network, and hopefully this will really give give more of a chance for the people in the international community to read the news and have a better understanding of what reality is here.
Well, we're talking to Kristen S., who's the editor with Palestine News Network. She also hosts the radio show Palestine Week in Review, as well as the daily news, which we play here every right before 8 o'clock, Democracy Now! In the morning. We air that program as well. I wanted to ask you about what's going on right now in Gaza with the whole pullout situation. I believe they're going to be starting on the 15th, and I was curious what your view is on that, because we're not getting any news hardly at all here in the U.S., of course, as usual. And I wanted to get your take on what's going on with the pullout.
One of the problems from our end of trying to report this situation accurately is that, unfortunately, the Israelis still view this as a unilateral step that they are using to somehow take eyes off of the fact that they're increasing settlements construction and wall construction inside of the West Bank and being much quicker about the land confiscation that they've been undertaking in the West Bank, which has really increased since this talk of the withdrawal began. The withdrawal from the Gaza Strip in the northern West Bank is slated to begin in 2 weeks, and from the northern West Bank once the Gaza Strip withdrawal is complete. Many people view that this is the only withdrawal that the Israelis will ever undertake and that they're not intending to undertake anymore, and that's pretty clear from what we're watching happening in the West Bank. Home demolitions are on the rise, and they already are very, very frequent. And so the Israelis really are being viewed as taking this opportunity when no one's really paying attention to the West Bank to demolish more houses that they view as being in the way of settlement expansion and wall construction. Also, this is a time where the situation in Jerusalem is really, really grave. It's absolutely against international law for the Israelis to change facts on the ground in Jerusalem. And, of course, as everyone knows, East Jerusalem is slated to be the capital of the Palestinian state. What the Israelis are doing is they're going so far as taking the small amount of space that's left in East Jerusalem to build new settlements. And they are getting away with it by saying that, well, look, we're withdrawing from Gaza. Of course, there's a wall that's being built around Jerusalem that's even more severe than a lot of areas in the West Bank, and it's called the Jerusalem Envelope. What they've done with that is isolated a lot of neighborhoods in East Jerusalem on the other side of the wall so that now they are not considered East Jerusalem anymore. Now they're considered to be other villages in the West Bank, and people no longer have access to East Jerusalem. The Israelis are also confiscating people's Jerusalem ID who now are stuck on the other side of the wall. People are losing their access to their schools and their health clinics and, of course, their families' livelihoods and their ability to reach Jerusalem and Al-Aqsa Mosque and the city that is supposed to be the capital of the Palestinian state. And this has been a very ugly move on the part of the Israelis that, unfortunately, people have not been paying that much attention to. As far as the Gaza Strip is concerned right now, one of the problems is that the Israelis are being very cloak and dagger about the withdrawal plan. This has been something that the Palestinian Authority has been trying to nail them down on for months and months, trying to get some simple information about what they're even going to do. Of course, the Israelis have come out in just since last night with a little bit more information as far as information sharing goes with the PA through the pushing of Wolfensohn, who's here, who is the envoy from the quartet. I guess he suggested to the Israelis that it might do them well to tell somebody what their plan is. And so the PA has gotten a little bit more information. So as it stands now, of course, the PA's concerns are things that you would think wouldn't be problems if the Israelis were actually going to end their occupation of the Gaza Strip. But it's not the case. The Israelis still will control the water, the electricity, the ports, and the borders. So what does that mean? All it really means for this withdrawal is that the settlements will be withdrawn from. The Israelis still can plan to surround the Gaza Strip, which, of course, will make it into more of a prison than it already is. People are have a very difficult time moving in and out of it. The border between Egypt and Rafah in the southern Gaza Strip was sealed off with a wall similar to that, to the wall that's being built in the West Bank. They started it a couple of years ago. They rendered thousands and thousands and thousands of people homeless in Rafah to build this wall, really like just tearing apart neighborhoods and going row by row into the neighborhoods and making the border bigger and bigger and then renaming it the Philadelphia Route. This is an Israeli name that they came up with to suggest that there is no one who had lived there instead of it being a heavily populated area just a couple of years ago. On this border, this wall, it's of course dotted with sniper towers, and unfortunately in that area it's one of the places where the occupation soldiers really use the population's houses as target practice. And the times that when I lived there, it didn't stop. They didn't stop shooting from the tanks that were driving back and forth along that wall. And so now the Israeli government announced that they will build two more walls on the north-south running part of the strip. So to the east, right now there's a fence, which is, of course, an electronic fence and highly guarded and militarized with occupation soldiers. Now they're going to build another fence, which is described in the same way the wall is described in the West Bank, sometimes as a fence and sometimes as a wall. You can see the wall in the West Bank is a wall. It's cement. And some people are saying this one can be built in the Gaza Strip. It's going to be part wall and part fence, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, they're building one 15 meters into the Gaza Strip from the existing one. Then they're going to build another one that's 70 to 150 meters to the east. So that means there will be three different ones, and Palestinians will lose even more land than they already have in the Gaza Strip. And these this wall will then be guarded by, of course, occupation soldiers, also remote control machine guns and cameras that, of course, will run the machine guns. So people will not still be able to come and go if they choose. They'll still have to go through occupation checkpoints. To be able to go out the only international border to Egypt, they'll still have to go through the Israeli occupation forces, although the PA is strongly fighting this, and this is their chance. It seems because there are some international eyes that are on the situation and people who are trying to push the Israelis, such as the Americans, who, of course, support the Israelis in this occupation with $3 billion a year, but right now are trying to do a little bit of double talk, at least to make the situation a little bit more palatable to the international community, because it is hard to continue to get away with the atrocities that the Israelis get away with on a daily basis. The American plan is, if not much better, and it certainly sells out the Palestinian refugees, it sells out the Palestinian cause, and it sells out the fact that the state of Israel is was imposed here by force and rendered so many more people homeless, killed so many people, and has deprived so many people of their humanity and their right to live. But in the same token, what's been the international community and Wolfensohn, the quartet, the Americans, have been pushing the Israelis to stop settlement construction in the West Bank and also to ease up on some of the ideas the Israelis have of continuing to impose their will on the Gaza Strip. So one of the ideas that has come out from the PA is that the area in the southwest, some of the southwest settlements, which of course is all the settlements lined the Mediterranean because the Israelis take the most fertile land for the settlements. And, of course, ports and the Mediterranean are considered very important. And so one of the ideas is for a Palestinian port to operate out of the area of the southwestern settlements once those settlements are gone. It'll remains to be seen how much control the PA will actually have over those things, because if you look at something like Oslo, there was a certain amount of distance that Palestinian fishermen were supposed to be able to fish off of a certain number of kilometers, which I forget now. I think maybe 15 off the coast into the Mediterranean. And the Israelis made it smaller and smaller as they saw fit and opened fire on fishermen, confiscated boats, took their nets, made their lives very difficult. So nobody really knows how that will actually play out. And, of course, early in this intifada, the Israeli occupation forces bombed the airport in Rafah and never allowed the PA to rebuild it. And so now it's supposed to be able to be operational, although the Israelis, of course, put up a lot of fuss about that. They don't want the Palestinians, of course, to control any of their own borders. So all of these things are kind of up in the air right now. People are really pushing and trying, but this is another situation where the PA takes what it can get. It's considered a sellout by many people in the same way that Oslo was. The idea that the Palestinians, or some of them, at least in the PA, are in the position to try to get something like the roadmap to be used by the Israelis, a really sad state of affairs, since the roadmap spells out the refugees, and it's another document that is viewed along the lines of Oslo, which is something that's not good for the Palestinians if you look at what reality is here, that it might make the situation a little bit better and a little bit easier to live through for a while, but in the end it misses a lot of the most important aspects and doesn't really hold the Israeli occupation forces and the state of Israel responsible for colonizing this entire area and continuing its takeover on this slow but steady process of ethnic cleansing of the native population that we've been watching go on.
We're talking with Kristen S. here of Palestine News Network, editor, also a host of the Daily News, which we broadcast here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. People can go to www.pnn.ps to find out Palestine News Network website. All the while, I wanted to ask you also that the attention, the U.S. press attention is on the Gaza pullout at the moment, but all the while, they're still building the wall over in the West Bank as well. I'm just reading a story right now where they're keeping a man from getting to his olive trees if they're not uprooting them to build the wall. And I was wondering, what's the latest on the whole wall construction and then, of course, the destruction of the homes and people's lives, and how are people coping with that?
The way that most people have been looking at this situation, especially the residents of the West Bank, been pretty clear from the beginning and before so much attention was being paid to the possible withdrawal from the Gaza Strip. And I say possible because the Israelis have been promising or saying they're going to do this for a long time. And they tried to create as much chaos around it as possible so that they might later be able to suggest that it's not a simple thing to move the settlers. Of course, seeing as how the settlers and the settlements are illegal under international law and human decency, you would think that it wouldn't be that hard, and it actually isn't. It's just another media stunt from what it looks like on the ground. As far as the West Bank and the wall construction, as I mentioned earlier, the Israelis really are using this opportunity to speed it up. Sharon said that the Jerusalem envelope should be completed by September 1st, and the Israeli High Court agreed to that, and so that's what's been done. Sharon also said that the entire wall construction should be sped up. And this is the Americans, at least, who, of course, are the benefactors of the Israeli occupation forces, say things publicly like you need to stop building the settlements in the West Bank and you need to stop the wall. The Israelis, of course, just keep doing it anyway. One of the things that's been pretty clear is that there's no end in sight to the wall and there's no end in sight to the suffering of the population. It's being the West Bank is being divided up into three sections, which some people think will be connected by a road, such as the one they're suggesting to impose between the West Bank and Gaza Strip, called a safe passage. The safe passage between the Gaza Strip is not a free passage. It's a free passage to the Israelis and a safe passage to the Palestinians. It means if you're a Palestinian and you're driving between the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, which this road will be entirely controlled by the Israeli military, you won't be able to pull over your car at all. Even if you need to stop to use the bathroom, buy a candy bar, or get gas in your car, you can't stop. But if you are Israeli, you could pull your car over and you can get out and have a picnic because it's a free passage. This is the kind of a situation that a lot of people in the West Bank are expecting on that road. They're expecting a similar thing on the roads that link the Bantustans that will be created in the West Bank. Excuse me. There will be one road that links the, for example, the Ramallah district to the Beit Lahem district. And on that road, it will be controlled by Israeli occupation forces. And there won't be any other routes for people to take. And of course, those roads can be closed whenever the Israelis want to close them. There's also been a lot of talk about tunnels. that will be Palestinian only, and the only route for Palestinians to take between those different areas. So it's not going to be any more open in the West Bank, certainly for people. I mean, people in the Gaza Strip will be in a prison without settlements in between them, but they'll still be in a large prison. And then each district in the West Bank is going to be in its own prison. The Israelis went so far as to suggest that the Rafah-Egypt border be moved so that it would be out of Rafah and out of the Gaza Strip so that the Israelis could ensure that they control it. Same thing's going for the eastern edge of the building of the wall in the West Bank. Along the east would be the only chance that the Palestinians would have from the West Bank to control their own border to go to Jordan. But the Israelis have built the wall inside so that they can control those borders too. And right now, of course, due to the closure, unemployment is really high. Poverty is really, really high. And people's desperation is even worse. And a lot of people have talked about the idea that the way that this stage of the ethnic cleansing process is being employed is to strangle people to the point where they just simply want to leave so that people will. If there's no money, people can't get married and they can't have children, and so eventually the population is going to die out. There's a lot of different ways that people interpret what's happening, but the thing that remains clear and the same with everyone is that it's an absolute disaster and a continuation of one. And so it's sort of a double-edged sword in the way that some people wanted to celebrate Oslo. And others knew that it was, maybe everyone knew that it was a bad deal, but it was the best thing that they could get. So a lot of people are looking at this pullout from Gaza and this possible implementation of this roadmap as being something that's not good, but it's the best that they can get. It's a little bit better than what they had yesterday. Of course, every year in general, it gets worse. And the situation is really desperate in the West Bank, and people are looking at it as such. The agricultural production is the major component of the economy of the West Bank, as it was in the Gaza Strip before the Israelis destroyed the north of the Gaza Strip, one of the most fertile areas that was there. I mean, an area that was so fertile that it was able to sustain the Gaza Strip with its production, just agricultural production, Beit Hanun and Beit Lahia. But, of course, those lands have been destroyed. And the same thing that's happening like that in the West Bank, like you mentioned, the farmer not being able to reach his olives, that's been happening over and over and over, and it's not getting any better. It's not only the wall. People were blocked off by random checkpoints, flying checkpoints, jeeps parking in the middle of the road, soldiers chasing people, house arrests, people being shot at when they try to work, and of course that's by the Israeli occupation forces. But there's also another proponent that's especially dangerous in the West Bank, and that's the settlers. The Israeli settlers that have been attacking Palestinians for quite a while really seem to target the farmers more than anything because they're in rural areas. They target old women and old men and kids, as we've seen a lot of reports of. And a lot of times these people are farmers that are trying to go and work on their land. And these are their lands, of course, that have been in their families for generations. It's their right to farm them. It's their right to go to them. But the Israeli occupation forces either block them off from their wells so that they can't water them anymore, or they put their fields on the other side. This is to confiscate more of the most fertile land to make sure that the Palestinian population is not self-sustainable in any kind of a way. That's part of the ethnic cleansing process. And we watch it continue, it almost becomes a moot point to talk about it, but it is necessary. But this idea that, you know, there's three houses demolished here and one farmer can't get to his olives there, the point is it's 1,000 farmers and it's 10,000 houses, and it's happening all the time, over and over, every day, and it gets worse and worse and worse. But there's really nothing positive to say at all about the situation in the West Bank as it gets increasingly worse, and no one's paying attention to it in the international media, it seems, but I have heard a lot of reports that the American media, at least, is paying heavy lip service to the Israeli settlers that are leaving the Gaza Strip.
Yes, that's true. I saw something on CBS where they focused more on a soldier who walked off away because he wouldn't arrest a Jew or something like that. It was kind of weird. It was the way it was framed, the way I saw it anyway. And it was them arresting settlers who refused to leave, I believe.
I didn't quite catch what you said, but I heard something. I don't have a very good connection on my end. But I think you said something about the Israeli soldiers arresting settlers. And those are, if that's really happening, if it's not done for the camera, as it has been done in the past in the West Bank, which we've witnessed, that being a camera stunt, this is actually happening. And I believe that it is in the Gaza Strip. I believe that there are a lot of fundamentalists that live in the Gaza Strip who think that that's the chosen land for the chosen people and that they shouldn't be leaving it. Regardless of that, the fact is that they're illegally there. They're illegal settlers. The settlements are illegal, and they stole the land. And so I can't imagine how anyone could really take seriously the idea that these people are losing something. I mean, they shouldn't be there in the first place. And unfortunately, the situation there for the population that does belong there isn't so much going to get any better, because that population is actually, a lot of them are refugees, and they're from places that are now referred to as Tel Aviv. A lot of the refugees who live in Rafah, for example, are from that area that's now called Tel Aviv. The situation gets played in the media, of course, in some kind of way that the occupiers are actually the victim of the occupied. And that's been going on for years and years, and the Israelis get away with it easily. And this is just more of it. And these fights between the soldiers and the settlers just play into it as fodder for the media, so that they can be distracted from the real situation, which is the Israeli occupation of Palestine and the fact that that's what needs to stop. And the Palestinian refugees need to be allowed to return to their homes, which is their right under international law and cannot be negotiated away, regardless of who decides they're going to sign the roadmap. It's no one's right to take away that individual and collective right, but the right of return.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org. And we're talking to Kristen S., editor of Palestine News Network, www.pnn.ps. And I was wondering if you had any closing words about the situation, what's going on. And actually, I'm curious how you cope. How have you coped for all this time, you know, dealing with all this news and being able to push on, especially probably all the folks at PNN, with all the oppression that is happening with the occupation of Palestine?
The point that I want to bring up at the end so that no one forget is that one of the most important issues that has been pushed to the side over and over is the issue of Palestinian political prisoners. It's about 8,000. Sometimes the Israelis make a big circus out of the fact that they're going to release a couple of hundred. Those people are usually administrative detention, which means 6-month sentences at a time without charge or trial, and most of those people were about to finish their 6-month sentences anyway. Israeli occupation forces do raids in towns, break into people's homes, and tear apart their lives every single night in the West Bank and take people to the prisons. Those are political prisoners, and the Israelis have neglected to take seriously this issue, and it's one of the most major issues that people are trying to keep on the radar. And those are the people that have suffered through everything and have lost they've lost everything in their lives, and their families are trying to survive without them. And so that is actually something that needs to not be forgotten, especially when people are being distracted by some settler's tear who isn't supposed to be in the Gaza Strip in the first place. We need to not forget how many Palestinians that ended up refugees or ended up living in the Gaza Strip after the State of Israel was created in 1948. How many of those people then were born into a situation where they were entirely oppressed by occupation and then got put into the occupation prisons and have been left there to rot, essentially. That's the thing that we need to keep a focus on. And there are a lot of people here that do great work on that Palestinian Prisoner Society and have lawyers to try to get in and see the people. Of course, there are a lot of political prisoners the Israelis won't allow to have lawyers see, and people are disallowed visits with their families and are given all sorts of punitive punishments. And, of course, people are dying right and left in the Israeli prisons for medical neglect. when people do make it out of the prisons, a lot of them are handicapped because of the torture that they underwent, because an interrogator broke their arm and they had to put it back in the socket themselves and never were able to see a doctor about it. And a lot of the people that ended up in that were taken to the prisons were people who were shot maimed in the process and were never received medical care. So there's a lot of people walking around limping, a lot of people with serious physical damage, not to mention the psychological damage that people go through by being kept in a cupboard for weeks on end. And the kinds of stories that the prisoners tell when they're not too ashamed to tell them when they make it out of the prisons, or the stories the lawyers tell, are the kinds of things that make any of us know that the people that are suffering are them, and that we need to keep focus on what's real and what's important, and that's to get those people out of prison and end this occupation.
And again, we're talking to Kristen S. here, Palestine News Network. Kristen, I really want to thank you for taking the time to speak to us here in Santa Cruz and beyond, and for all the work that everybody does at PNN, Palestine News Network. And I just appreciate your work. We play the show here every day, and it just amazes me all the things that are happening there on a daily basis that never, ever get reported anywhere else.
Thanks to you too for your show and for playing the PNN radio as often as you can. And thanks to all the people in Santa Cruz. I think that it's a gorgeous town that I've been lucky enough to be in a few times in my life, and it's a really beautiful place. And hopefully, the people who live here will get to enjoy the freedom that the people in Santa Cruz get at some point.
All right. Hold on the line just a moment. I'll talk with you off air. Again, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org. This song is called King Prawn. It's called Bring Down the House. Free Radio.
This is a story that you should all know. Once upon a time, 20 years ago, Shatila and Sabra, your echoes are deaf, like buried in rubble, but we won't forget. Soldiers are gone in your blood and your tears, silent when bearers of gunshots there, who learned of your fate, there ain't no escape. Loaded on drugs, headed for a mass grave.